I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
Leinster could have me 5 mil a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moore!
Rugby weekly.
Little reverse pass, and
hey, welcome to Friday's Rugby Weekly podcast, coming to you live from a small corridor somewhere in the back of the Aviva Stadium. Kieran Kennedy here, and I'm joined by Murray Kinsley. We've just been listening to Peter O'Mahony run through his pre-match press conference after Ireland's captain's run here this morning. We're going to hang around and see what Scotland have to say for themselves a little while later ahead of Super Saturday here in Dublin. But before we dig into all that, we'll just give you some info and a great offer we've just launched. If you aren't already a subscriber to the 42 and you want to get on board, you can sign up now for €48 for the first year of an annual subscription, or €3.99 for the first month of a monthly subscription. And it's the 42.ie/subscribe is where you need to go for that. Now, the reason why you might want to sign up this weekend is that you'll get access to our post-match podcast from the Aviva tomorrow, where hopefully we'll be reflecting on another Six Nations title win. And you'll also be able to listen to our Bumper Monday podcast, where we'll have a deep dive review of Ireland's Six Nations campaign. Subscribers get access to two subscriber-only episodes of Rugby Weekly Extra every week. And then, of course, you've got all of our trademark tactical breakdown articles and all of our coverage ahead of a massive couple of months of rugby, with the Women's Six Nations kicking off, the Champions Cup heating up, the business end of the URC, and then the small matter of Ireland's summer tour to South Africa. So loads to look forward to, loads to get stuck into. And again, it's the 42.ie subscribe if you want to sign up. And the big one this weekend is Ireland Scotland here in Dublin. Murray, how are you feeling about Super Saturday in the Aviva?
I'm excited. I have some great memories of these days, foremost 2015 over in Murrayfield, when Ireland got their big win over Scotland that they needed, and then we all had to wait anxiously as England and France played an absolutely mental game. And we watched every kick of it and every try of it. And eventually, Ireland's title was secured and they came back out and they got the trophy, and loads of Irish fans had hung around. Now, it might be a bit different this time around. Ireland might just get the job done. And if they get their win, they secure the championship. If they draw, they secure the championship. Even if they get two losing bonus points, they're guaranteed the championship. So you kind of expect it to be done and dusted at that stage. If they lose, they don't get a match point at all, then it'll be anxious times watching on from Lyon. But there's plenty on the line here for Ireland, a championship. I know there's a sense of anti-climax for some people, but certainly not in the squad. They really are underlining how big an achievement it would be to get another title. And I do agree. I think you can't take these things for granted. There's been loads of years that I've covered Ireland, maybe not as many in recent times, where they haven't had the trophy success. So I think it's a big honour. And after the disappointment of last weekend in England, which is clearly very real for the players, and they really feel like they're going to try and right some wrongs, you'd expect them to deliver quite a strong, convincing and complete performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And that has been the mood all week. The players definitely a little deflated after what happened in Twickenham, but they have moved this on pretty quickly. And the sense is that they do realise what a huge opportunity this is to win a Six Nations title at home in Dublin. Like you say, those opportunities don't come around very often. And Peter O'Mahony was kind of hammering that home here just a couple of moments ago. And the Ireland captain seemed in pretty chipper mood today.
He did, yeah. He's been really positive in his media dealings over the last while, and certainly since taking on the captaincy. I do hope it's a really brilliant contest tomorrow, because I think that will give the most sense of gratification. If Ireland play really well, but it's a good contest, and they win that good contest, like, you can't tell people to enjoy something or to feel like it's the biggest deal ever. You just can't. And the reality is that the expectations of Irish rugby fans and people around the team are way, way higher than they've ever been. And there probably will be a lingering disappointment that they didn't manage to get over the line and get a Grand Slam. But I think if it's a game where Scotland turn up as well, and Ireland win, of course, and get that good outcome, I think it'll be all the more satisfying for everyone who's watching on. So the Scots themselves have rights to wrong. Like, they have wrongs to right, rather. They let a big opportunity slip in Rome, and Italy, as we discussed on the pods during the week, thoroughly deserve it in terms of winning it. But Scotland will feel, having got that big lead in the first half an hour, they're 22-10 up, that they should have closed it out. And it feels like, which is not unfamiliar for them, this is a championship that just got away from them. Obviously the France game and the dramatic circumstances, but the frustration for them is they, it could be so different coming to Dublin now with everything on the line, possibly even. And though Ireland's record against them is excellent, that's another wrong, massive wrong that they have to right. And like, they're going to have to beat Ireland someday, aren't they? This record can't go on forever, can it? Maybe, but that'll keep Ireland minds focused even more so. And also the fact that last year here, when the Grand Slam was there, Ireland got over the line, of course, but they were not pleased with their performance. They're not going for Grand Slam now. It's a championship. But I think, again, that sense of finishing with a bang is really important to this group.
Yeah, and you sense it's important to Andy Farrell too, even in the fact that he's backed the same starting 15 to go out and do the job this weekend. The one big doubt in that starting 15, of course, was Calvin Nash. And I think for some people, there's still maybe a little bit of confusion about how a player can get forced off for a HIA and 7 days later start in the Ireland team. But he's come through his protocols. He's been passed fit to play. And once he's passed fit to play, it's a boost to have him back in that back three.
It is, because he's done well in that role on the right wing. And I do think some people, when they saw the team being named, were surprised. And I probably put myself in that bracket. But as Ireland explained yesterday, they've gone through all the processes on this. I think the confusion is that in 2022, World Rugby came out and said there's going to be a 12-day return to play protocol now. But there still is a scope for a player to come back within 7 days if they don't have a history of concussion, or if they haven't displayed what are called criteria one indications of concussion on the match day when the head injury happens. And there's a list of those on the World Rugby website. I don't go through them all here, but Calvin Nash fell into that 7-day process essentially, and he's passed all his HIAs. He also had to have an independent concussion consultation with an independent doctor, which World Rugby requires, and that was all above board, and he came through that as well. So Andy Farrell said, you've got to trust the experts on this. I did ask him if any part of him still thought, even with all that expertise and the process saying that you've got to go that way, whether you think, oh, do I just keep him out of this? But, you know, he pointed out that's why those processes are there. Ciarán Frawley's a different one, because he actually had to go into the 12-day recovery. They didn't specify exactly why that was, or what the criteria one indication might have been, or what the history was there, but it was a different process. And actually, Andy Farrell said they should have made that more clear at the start of the week, because it did maybe create some of the confusion. So he's back, Calvin Nash, and he'll be another of those guys determined to finish with a real bang in this championship. He only got, what, 3.5 minutes, and that was his game over last weekend. But prior to that, he'd been doing well. He'd been getting more and more involved. He'd been aggressive, as he was in that moment where he hits Tommy Freeman. He'd been aggressive defensively, and even the lovely touch, if you think, for James Lowe try where they're playing from right to left, and he gets that lovely kind of overhead pass over Josh Adams against the Welsh. Really nice moment that he'll be hoping to have more of. And I'm not a bit surprised that he's not changed the team. It often surprises me the reaction when Ireland lose, how there's just straight away calls for kind of jettisoning so many players who've actually had a few good games in a row. I think maybe Joe McCarthy's one in that ilk. A 22-year-old guy playing his first Six Nations, like, you'd have to expect one game maybe or moments here and there where things don't go perfectly, but he's had loads of good moments as well, and now he gets a chance to bounce back. So on the whole, not a surprising starting 15 selection, and the 6-2 bench is gone. What do you think of that decision to go to the 5-3?
Not surprised once Ciarán Frawley was unavailable. But it's an interesting bench again. And the thing that jumped out to me about it was the quality of the guys who've missed out. It was unusual to have Ian Henderson up doing media earlier in the week and then not be in the match day squad at all. And we've both spoken about how good Stuart McCloskey has been in this championship, and for him to not make the bench as well, he must be at that point again where he's just wondering, like, what do I need to do here to keep some consistency in terms of selection? So your three backline options tomorrow are Conor Murray, Harry Byrne, who I thought had some really nice touches when he came on against Italy, but he hasn't had a look in otherwise. And then Guy Ringrose, what a player to bring back in. He hasn't featured at all in this Six Nations. It's a strong bench. I can see the sense in going back to the 5-3 with not having Frawley there. And again, as Farrell has said, it's based on the opposition so much of the time, isn't it? And they feel that this is the right option to take on this Scotland team. And he thinks he's going to get a response from those players. And just what you're saying there on the likes of Joe McCarthy and all the players who kind of didn't quite perform to the level we've come to expect in Twickenham, it is really important, I think, that those guys do come back and respond with it with a performance, because if this doesn't go well tomorrow, it's such a deflating end to the Six Nations. I thought the chance to win back-to-back Grand Slams would have been a really statement achievement for this team, and something to just back up the idea that everything they did in the lead up to the World Cup kind of wasn't for nothing, and that momentum was still there. I think even if you scrape a Six Nations title in a tight match tomorrow, some of that momentum is lost again. But I think if you go out and avoid what we saw here last year, that kind of nervy performance against England, if you go out and give the type of performance we saw in Marseille at the start of the championship, a level they haven't really got to since, go out and deliver something like that again, it just kind of reinforces that belief again and puts everything kind of back in the right trajectory ahead of, as you mentioned at the top of the show, a huge year for Irish rugby with that summer tour to South Africa, and then the pretty big tasty home internationals here in November. But what about Scotland? You touched on their record earlier, 2010 of course since they last won in Dublin. They've lost each of their last nine against Ireland. They talk a good game generally when they're coming over here, but they've been oddly quiet this week, perhaps
nicking their wounds, I would suggest, and understandably so. And any strategy where they've been bullish in the past hasn't been particularly helpful. I know the Netflix clips have resurfaced, of course, this week of them discussing Ireland, but like the stuff they're saying is obvious stuff that any team says about anyone in their position, and you're trying to make yourself believe as much as make anyone else believe. It's such a familiar Scotland team, you know. It feels like we've seen this game so many times now, and we've seen the outcome so many times. Two changes with Stafford McDowell coming in at 12 for Cameron Redpath, I think to try and help manage the physicality that Aki brings, which was so prominent again in Twickenham. He was just relentless in going after and getting that game line for Ireland. A big Jackal turnover at one stage. He was frustrated with a couple of penalty decisions, but he's such a totem for Ireland that they've got to try and manage that. And Ben White coming back in, he's been excellent in their kicking game in particular. And him and Russell, for the first three games of the championship in particular, I thought the Scots did really well with their kicking game, and they limited their instincts to play, I suppose, with a flair, but a dangerous flair, I see it in Scotland sometimes. I thought that came out to its worst effect last weekend against Italy. They had 25 offloads, and I know that sounds cool, and some of it was cool and it was effective, but other times it was just inviting pressure from Italy. It was inviting the game to break up. And I actually think they're better when they're slightly more leaned towards what I see as Townsend's view of the game now, rather than, say, Finn Russell's. And maybe I'm being reductive in seeing it that way, but I think they have these two sides where one of them, they're real quite disciplined in how they approach it, and they're a little more boring, and they'll kick long and on, and they'll make you turn a lot. And the other one is where they just try and play everything and overplay at times. I think when Russell is disciplined in that Gregor Townsend approach, it works brilliantly, because his passing and his kicking skills can still come to the fore, but they don't give up as much opportunity. And they've got to do that really well against an Ireland team who are very disciplined usually in how they play. And the other bit is always the physicality. Ireland usually win that contest against Scotland. I have seen, like, the Scottish pack, if you're looking at the record of these two packs, you'd say Ireland's is much better. But that Scotland pack has some quite physical performances in it. They usually reserve it for England, when the likes of Turner and Gilchrist, these guys seem to go to an extra level, and they just have to find that and find it for 80 plus minutes against Ireland, because that just hasn't been the case. And even when things haven't been as slick as Ireland want them, I feel like they've always had a confidence that they can kind of bully the Scots up front.
Can they find that performance though? Because, like, we've obviously been focusing so much on how Ireland are going to react to a disappointing result last week. Like, Scotland are coming off a really damaging result as well, coming out of the Italy game. I think we're both expecting Ireland to win tomorrow. I feel like I've maybe say that with a little bit more confidence than you do, is the sense I get. What would be the case that Scotland can come here and win tomorrow?
If Ireland are similar to last week and are off it just a bit, and like Scotland, if they're on it on that same day, then Scotland for me win that match. Like, Ireland constantly tell us the record doesn't matter. It's who the best team is on the day. And it's so right, even though it completely negates all this chat we have all week pre and post match. It is true. And last week, Ireland weren't the best team on the pitch by a notable distance, even though it's a 1-point margin. England were the best team and they won that game. And so all the stuff that happened in the previous years, in the previous weeks, in the days before, wasn't quite relevant. So it's a fresh reminder for Ireland. That's why you think it's highly unlikely to happen again, for them to be off, for them to put down balls, for them to have defensive lapses where you think that's just like a focus thing there. And why are guys swarming around a choke tackle attempt there? Or why aren't they filling the short side? And now why are they overfilling the short side on this try? Because they're not quite clear-headed and making good decisions about what's in front of them. Why are they doing things on that are disjointed and not in cohesion with the team, which is something we associate with them. So yeah, I'd be surprised if Ireland are off it again. And I think if they are close to their best, it's too good for Scotland. I don't think that's disputable, really, even if Scotland played out of their skins. So that's the bit that's missing when people look at the 9-game winning streak. Like, look at the World Cup game. Ireland got to a 36-0 lead, and it's great fun for everyone going, the Scots are just a rabble, they're mugs. But actually, that was a brilliant Ireland performance. I know it was only a pool game and people were right off for that, but they were excellent. Absolutely excellent to get that lead. And they have been at loads of other points in this rivalry. But there have been other ones where it's been really close. Think of the first game in Andy Farrell's tenure. It was a 19-12 win, but Stuart Hogg dropped the ball over the try line. It should have been a Scotland win. There was one over in Murrayfield, I think it was the following year, where Johnny Sexton has to kick a penalty in the 77th minute after Baird makes a big play. So there have been nervy ones as well. And you just think that if Ireland can avoid that situation, it'll make it a far more successful and satisfying championship.
Yeah, they've been nervy ones and there's been a couple of spicy ones as well. So we'll see what type of game we get tomorrow. Just before we move on from Ireland, there's been another little development in the Antoine Frisch story, which has rumbled on all week and looks like it's going to rumble on for some time. There is fresh quotes from the French camp today about where Frisch potentially sees his Ireland future. You've got the story up on the site already, but for anybody who hasn't seen it yet, just fill us in on the latest.
Well, Nicolas Jean-Jean, their physical performance director, was asked questions about Frisch, and it basically says, we think he's committed because he was here. And that's how I certainly view it. Like, you're not going to accept a call up to French senior team training camp if you don't think, actually, this is the way I want to go. Particularly given that you're actually playing in Ireland as things stand. Andy Farrell was asked about it yesterday. He had said he's 100% still at the front of our minds, but it didn't sound quite as bullish in terms of the French statement of saying he seemed to be really delighted to be here. They said he's a French player born in France, which they certainly are the facts of the matter. So yeah, it's been mad, really, actually. This has been virtually every media event. Someone's been asked about it. Tadhg Byrne, even his Munster teammate, discussing it, but not really committing either way to getting involved in it. And it's kind of mad how this has become a big story. A guy who, you know, is well down the depth chart for both nations. France have quite a few injuries in midfield at the moment, unavailabilities rather, and that's how he kind of got into that mix. And obviously Ireland have loads of good centres. Right now, you have to sense that he's going to get captain that France tour in the summer, wouldn't you? They're going to leave frontliners behind. They're going to South America, Argentina for a couple of games and one other match. And it's kind of like a developmental slant on it. There'll be none of the top 14 semi-finalists. And yeah, I mean, if Frisch went to camp this week, it would suggest certainly the French he's committed. And it now sounds like there's obviously, this is not going to be a shock, but top 14 clubs are really on notice now that if he is going to commit to France, they'll be looking to grab him because he's a fine player. So it's kind of weird, isn't it? Before I play a big international match, this is the biggest talking point, but it is kind of unique circumstances as well.
Yeah, it's really weird. And particularly, like you say, because it's a player who is not involved this weekend and is a player who wasn't going to be on the, I suppose, on the radar this week at all, really. And we've even, like, there was a French journalist here today asking Peter O'Mahony about Antoine Frisch, and I'm sure we'll have those quotes up on the 42 tomorrow. So it's going to rumble on. And for now, I guess it's just watch this space. Wales, Italy, the first game of tomorrow, kicking things off. Unfortunately for Italy, no Ange Capuzzo. He's out with a fractured finger. And for Wales, a significant game because it's George North's last game. And God, what an international career. They're up first. It's the, I suppose, it's the wooden spoon decider. What are you hoping for? What are you expecting?
I'm expecting, and I think there's actually almost a hint of pressure on Italy now to go again. And they've had two good games where they've drawn with France, really good result. Obviously, it could have been a win. And the brilliant win last weekend against Scotland, you just really want to see it tripled up almost. And for them to be that consistent force, it is a shame to miss Capuozzo, but they have loads of talent in their team. And there's no reason why they can't go. And almost expected of them themselves. It is kind of mad seeing George Knight wrap it up, isn't it? Like, it's, he's just been ever present in Test rugby, I feel like, since I've been really closely following and watching it. And he was such a phenomenon when he first broke through. Like, he still looks so young, but you just, the power, the size of him, the ability to change direction at pace, picking up Israel Folau, I'll never forget that moment, 2013 for the Lions. He was just such a titan of a winger, and moved into the centre more recently, obviously. But what a career he's put together, and the latest of the Welsh legends to go. It's quite incredible what they've lost in terms of experience and just sheer volume of caps. And it's such a different era for them now, and you can kind of feel that pressure on Gatlin and him thinking, oh my god, yeah, he's very enthusiastic about the challenge, but it must be tough to look at a squad that just has that kind of callow. And yeah, they've got to show that this new era is going to be a positive one. There's nothing else but a win for this. I don't buy into all the chat around, oh, you know, they've performed well in defeat. I know it's a tough championship for them with all that loss of experience, but Gatland is not a coach who readily accepts losing. So that's going to be a ferocious battle, I think.
Yeah, and then finishing things up tomorrow night, it's France against England. France's little tour around the country continues. They're playing in Lyon tomorrow. I was lucky enough to be in that stadium during the World Cup. It's absolutely class. The atmosphere there is going to be electric tomorrow night. But they're two teams who had such strange tournaments, really. And I don't know about you, I have no idea what to expect from this, and I have no idea which way this one's going to go.
I hope it's a proper crunch, as they call it in France, and that England are close to what they were last weekend. It's probably the most excited I've been to watch England for a while because of what they delivered last weekend and how brilliant they were defensively, how crisp and accurate and fast they were in attack, how athletic they were, how aggressive and yet focused and composed they were. I thought it was a really excellent, enjoyable performance to watch. Really good rugby that they played and well coached. So you hope that there's something similar. France, they won well, I thought, in Wales, and I think their performance has almost been a little bit underrated because, you know, it was a contest for, what, 60, and then they had the might to pull clear. I thought some of their attacking work was way better. Definitely defensive fix-ups. Some of the tries and line breaks they conceded were just way too easy at that level. But they'll probably feel that they've trended towards their best performance at the championship. And I think the injection of the likes of Le Garec and Deportaire have helped that a bit. It feels fresher. It feels more energetic. And I really hope that is almost classic that it really could be.
And just before we wrap up, a big night for the Ireland under 20s as well, chasing a third straight championship. There's a potential third Grand Slam in a row on the line. It would just be great to see this team really do something special again.
They're must watch, aren't they? They're so much fun to watch because they are clever. They're really well coached as well. And you saw how they went around trying to beat the England Blitz last weekend. It was real mature and smart, and they're skillful and quite a brave team, and they've got their own kind of grit to grab that draw after it looked like they'd lost the game against England was impressive. So they've been excellent to watch. The Scottish 20s have not been excellent to watch over the last few years. So obviously Ireland are firm favourites. And then you look at the team that France have put out for their game with England. It's phenomenal level of talent. They've been holding back. I haven't used players who were eligible earlier in this championship because of top 14 commitments. Obviously Tuilagi playing in the senior Six Nations, and now he drops back. So it's quite an imposing selection. Maybe it won't all click together straight away because they haven't been in training together all the time. But yeah, that certainly tees Ireland up for a good shot at it. And it will be just a phenomenal way for Richie Murphy to head on off to Ulster for the next big step in his career. I think nearly every coach that stepped through that 20s programme has done a good job and coached well and got good, valuable lessons out of it, leading a team and being in international rugby, having a real focused campaign like that and the World Championship, and he's certainly another of those. So hopefully it continues the way it has been, because it's been outstanding to follow and to watch.
Yeah, and let's hope it's an outstanding weekend for Irish rugby. We'll be back from the Aviva tomorrow night with a post-match podcast, and as we mentioned at the top of the show, we will have a bumper Six Nations review on Monday as well. And just a reminder that if you want to sign up to that offer, it's €48 for the first year of an annual subscription to the 42 or $3.99 for the first month of a monthly subscription, and it's the 42.ie/subscribe to sign up. Until then, enjoy your weekend and we'll catch you soon.
But the boys in the better land, you're always talking about the boys in the better land. the boys in a better land. Drivers got names for their two double barrels. He spits out.